Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, you were able to, as has become an annual tradition, take part in the opening and fly out to the West Coast and really see what is the greatest concentration of high talent. Really, not to sound like a opposing coach from 10 years ago or sound, but literally you get to see the 1% of the 1% when it comes to high school football players out there. The greatest concentration of athletes at one time that you're probably going to see at any point throughout the recruiting cycle. So we'll certainly have a large portion of this devoted as kind of a recruiting catch-up, and a lot of your personal opinions and takes from what you saw out in Oregon. Always excited to do one of these upon your return, and this year is certainly no different. So before we get into all that, we will start by thanking all of our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce and the relationship that we've had with them now going on nearly a year. And we've told you all about how good that product is. We've talked about how we incorporate it into our own personal routines and different little meals throughout the day. And just want to thank you guys as the listener. The mentions in the iTunes reviews when you mention Louisiana Hot Sauce, on Twitter when you mention Louisiana Hot Sauce. Just been very fortunate to be able to work with people like Louisiana and have listeners such as yourself. So thank you for that. And please do keep them in mind moving forward and next time you're in the grocery store. So, Bud, let's jump into the meat and potatoes of the podcast for tonight.
All right, let's do it. I was out there in Portland, as you said, in Beaverton. Got, by the way, a couple of excellent recommendations from Nolcast listeners on restaurants out there. So that was great. Got a great listenership. I've got to see some friends out there. Got to see some good industry contacts. And, you know, as much as it is, you get a chance to see these kids. And certainly there is a great benefit to that. I also think talking to people that you're shooting video next to on the sidelines, just chatting up, hey, what are you hearing about this? What do you think is going to happen there? How solid do you think this kid is? If you're doing it right, you're constantly gathering information, right? You're not just taking video. You're not just sticking a microphone in a kid's face. I guess we should probably start with the Justin Fields show. The quarterback, recent decommit from Penn State, had one of the best performances out there you'll ever see. He's obviously a total stud. We've been big fans of him on the Nolcast since the Orlando Nike opening camp, in which people were like debating all the different Florida quarterbacks who they thought were the best at the camp. And I was over here like, pretty sure the Georgia kid, Justin Fields, is the best quarterback here at the Orlando camp. I'm not really sure what everybody else is watching. So that's who we made a video of that day for SB Nation. And he's just taken off, not because of us, but certainly we've liked him for quite a while. 6'3", 221. I think we've covered who he's looking at before, but if you're kind of new to this, I certainly will go back over that. It is Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, and Georgia in no particular order. Not 100% sure how serious he is about Alabama. I do think he's fairly serious about the other four schools. He told me that he wants to take a return visit to all of the schools that he's already visited, so that would be those four or five. Just had a great day. I mean, I was very impressed. One thing that I hadn't really seen from him before quite as much was his vision. And not in terms of a runner, but in terms of seeing the whole field, being able to quickly, you know, get off a read on one side and understand, because of what the coverage was dictating, who would be open on the backside and getting the ball to him in a quick fashion. I was very impressed with Justin Fields. There will be some debate, Ingram, whether he should be the number one player in the country, or should it be Trevor Lawrence, or maybe a defensive player. And if you want to have Justin Fields as number one, I don't really have a problem with that. I'm going to keep Trevor Lawrence number one because I'm not going to let 2 days in a non-padded camp at Nike totally alter my opinion of the players. You know, you have to. That's another data point for me to consider as someone who's thinking, okay, who's the best player? Who's the second best player? They're both really elite players. For now, I'm going to stick with Lawrence because I feel like he has just absolutely dominated a good classification in Georgia, led his team to 3 straight titles. He's going to have all the Georgia passing records. He's ridiculous in pads. Not that Fields is not, but Fields has not been quite as good in pads as Lawrence has been. But if Fields goes out there and has just a crazy year on the field in pads, I got no problem with him being number one.
Yeah, he's certainly had a an astronomical rise really over these past 3 or 4 months. Now, it hasn't come from anywhere. I don't want it to sound like that, but he was generally seen as a solid four-star prospect, and people thought that Penn State had secured a really talented kid and were giving them credit for doing so, and justifiably so. But, man, in the past 2 weeks or so, well, really the past month or so, his stock has done nothing but skyrocket, and I don't know that I've ever seen a response or write-ups or just a general reaction to any kid at a particular camp as much or as positive as the one and the response that I saw surrounding Justin Fields. So he is he's kind of the prospect du jour for a lot of people in the country right now, and that's not just necessarily quarterback specific. So whether he's the best player in the country or the second best quarterback in his own state, regardless, kid's exceptionally talented and is one of the more sought after prospects anywhere in the country right now.
Absolutely. Now, this is interesting. When I talked about, hey, talking to the other analysts, I kind of got a consensus that Fields may be telling all of his schools kind of what they want to hear. He's played things very close to the vest in the media. He says good things about all his top schools. I certainly believe that there are certain things to like about all his top schools. One thing that I came away with, though, is, and especially after all this sort of recent Georgia news, obviously, long time ago, I believe his mom put a thing on Facebook that you know, this was the offer she wanted or something like that. It'd be great to have him stay home, that type of deal. He obviously is from Georgia. So Georgia people are feeling confident. Florida State people feel good. Florida people feel good. I think Auburn people feel good. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. And certainly there's some reasons to keep all parties involved and to let everybody very much think that they have a legitimate chance to win your services. And if you're going to go around sampling the wares and trying everybody's cooking, you don't necessarily not want people to put out the best table possible when you come and you sample and you see what's possible as you tour each school. So I can understand that. My personal opinion is that this is more about Georgia and Florida State than it is the two other schools. But we'll see. You're right. There's some different people within, supposedly, if you talk to people that are particularly close to Fields, there's different parts of his family that may have preferences for him to go well, and different staffs that have different relationships with people in kind of Fields' orbit. And I know Jim Chaney of Georgia has seemingly cultivated a strong relationship with his mom. And that's where a lot of the positive buzz from Athens comes from. My personal opinion, just what I've heard talking to people, I think it's Georgia and Florida State, and I would still feel confident if I'm a Florida State fan that's how it ends up. But it's I think you're right that there's been positive messages conveyed to all four camps that remain in the Fields hunt right now.
Other than the recruiting analyst initially who kind of had this thing wrong, it didn't include Florida State in their initial analysis upon his decommitment from Penn State. Almost every analysis after basically about a week post decommitment of Fields has included basically FSU and someone. So if you're an FSU fan, you have to like the consistency that most of these other analysts are not confident that they can exclude FSU. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to pick FSU. He'd be a great get if he did go there. But I think you got to feel pretty good.
Also, I'll point out, if you talk to people who are, you know, at least claim to be close to the Auburn staff, they think that their biggest competition is Florida State. When you talk to the people in Athens, they think their biggest competition is Florida State. I think that Florida State seems to be the consistent, and like I said, I think it's, in my personal opinion, it's down to two schools here, but we'll see how this plays out.
And if he does indeed take all of his visits like he wants to, or all of his return visits, I really don't feel confident in picking any school right now, because anything can happen on those visits, right? If he does make it a whole nother five trips or four trips, a lot.
It's a whole, yeah, it's a whole nother series of visits, and that's a good point. Good point.
Now, the only visit that he told me that he had an actual date locked in for was Auburn, which is interesting. And I don't feel comfortable counting on Auburn, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Yeah, no, you haven't, and you haven't since day one. You've been consistent with that, and credit to you.
Now, granted, that's some insider info because he told me, yeah, I've already got my Auburn return date set up. But I said, does that mean, you know, they're out in front or anything? And he said, no, I really just, I have to set up the other ones, but I'm going to return to all those schools. I was like, okay, cool. He also told me that he's going to take a couple weekends and pick up with like a travel baseball team and do a little travel baseball, stay fresh with the baseball over summer. So that'll be cool too. And I'm kind of interested in when these visits actually happen, because I think he would like to have the decision before his senior year starts so he can get out of the way and focus on his senior season. But I don't know that it's necessarily going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I know that's something that's been out there, but the Fields recruitment just seems to, I don't want to say a whole lot of things have changed, but certainly the scope of it has changed to him being this massive national prospect. That it seems like it might drag on a little bit later than some of the earlier reports. So we'll continue to talk about Fields, and it's been a guy, as you mentioned, we've spoken of for a while now. So hopefully we've brought you as good a coverage as possible of this, at least as possible through a podcast format. And we'll continue to break this down, and it'll be a significant matter as far as how it breaks for Florida State, but also how it breaks for Georgia. But I'm not going to try to turn this into a Georgia podcast, but that could be a real great get for them. It could also be another little bit of a stumbling blocks they've encountered over the past year or so in what was kind of expected to be Kirby's first, or not first real super class, but a follow-up on the spectacularly talented class that was last year.
Yeah, Ingram, and talking to Georgia folks there at the opening, they were thinking that Marquez Ezard, the receiver out of where's he out of?
He's out of Stockbridge, about 20 minutes south of Atlanta. It's down. It's about 15 minutes south of the airport, so it's a good half hour or so.
So, 6'2", kind of a skinny kid, but good wheels, good vertical, four-star receiver for folks who are real concerned about stars at this point in the year, which I'm really not, even though I think at the end of the year they're generally pretty damn good. Georgia people were telling me that their contacts on Georgia's staff were expecting Ezard to commit to Florida State, which is similar to what I was hearing at FSU. So that could be a great get for FSU out of Georgia. They need to take, I think, four receivers in this class this year. They already have two. They picked up Antoine Green, who I know we'll talk about in a moment, very recently, one of the top 19 unrated players in the country in an article by Bud Elliott in late May. That worked out pretty well considering he got the Ohio State, Tennessee, FSU, blah, blah, blah offers afterwards. But anyway, look for Ezard if he does end up committing soon to be Florida State, if those Georgia people are right. I'm sure Georgia wants to get him back on campus and see if they can get him maybe back loving Georgia. He is also planning, I believe, to visit for FSU camp in July. So that would be really good for FSU to kind of maybe get him on campus, get him extra confirmed into what he likes about Florida State. Additionally, I got another Georgia kid, the Kyaris Jackson kid. I was asking, I asked Fields actually to make some predictions on where he thought some of these Georgia receivers would go and where some of the Southern receivers would go. And he told me that he thinks Kyaris Jackson is all Georgia. And that Justin Ross is going to go to Auburn. But if not, then, I could certainly see Ross perhaps going to Alabama. At this point, I don't think Ross is going to leave the state of Alabama. And as far as Jackson, I think FSU's in it. But to be honest, I do think Georgia is probably the greater favorite there.
I think he put out a report tonight saying it's down to Georgia and Auburn. So that would certainly
Jackson
pair
did.
With that. Kyaris Jackson did. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a kid I know who's, has a fairly, I don't know if he has a strong relationship with Justin Fields, but they have, talked a decent amount and, I'm never going to say like some of the worst groupings or terminology in the recruiting industry, in my opinion, is a package deal. Those things rarely, if ever, come to fruition. And that's not what I'm saying is the situation at all. But if you're a Florida State fan, you could look at that a little bit with a concerning eye if you think that Jackson is as well tied to Fields as close as some have suggested.
Yeah, there's absolutely potential there for that. In Texas, I didn't get the vibe that Florida State is that hard in it for Brendan Eagles. I think he's more likely going to go to Texas, and that's going to be a heck of a receiver class Texas putting together. If they do get Eagles, Levante Woodard, who I think they'll get probably in the upcoming week, and then maybe also Jalen Waddle, who's looking at Texas pretty hard. But I tell you what, they are doing good work on Tommy Bush. I expect that Florida State maybe could get him back for an official visit. I know he likes Baylor a lot, but I'm not so sure how much Baylor's going to throw the football now that they have Matt Rhule there as their head coach. And if you go back and look at the offenses he had at Temple, they weren't really pitching the ball around all that much. So I'm not really sure how Baylor is going to look on the field. So if this does stretch out for the duration of the season, man, I got to tell you, I kind of think Florida State has a greater than zero shot at Tommy Bush, the receiver there out of Texas. 6'4", really good top end speed, good flexibility. Just learning how to play the position, needs some development, but I definitely like what I'm hearing about FSU and Bush.
Mm-hmm. Well, a name to remember, Bud, offensive tackle, William Barnes. Let us know what you think about where Florida State stands with him.
So, kid out of Apopka, obviously Apopka has traditionally been a good Florida feeder school. Florida does like him a lot. He likes Florida a lot. But I tell you, he just keeps mentioning FSU as well, and they keep, talking to him. And I'm not saying Florida State's going to be in the lead for this, but I do think that there is an actual chance with FSU and William Barnes, the offensive tackle. FSU does need to get two good tackles in this class. I know they like Armstrong. I think they like Armstrong maybe even a little bit more than I like Armstrong, so that's potentially encouraging. I think they usually do pretty good evaluations on kids, with the exception that, if you remember last year, was it the war party, right, where they were talking about how they didn't like the class of offensive tackles this year, or last year, right? Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that was nonsense. the offensive tackle class last year was awesome. The offensive tackle class this year is not. I mean, straight up, it's just not. Realistically here, I'm not sure how many of the tackles at the opening who were there this year would have actually been invited last year. So, I mean, granted, last year was a great year for tackles, but this is not necessarily a great year for tackles, but you still have to get two good ones, which makes it harder if there's just not that many great ones out there for you to get. The other thing I thought was encouraging here, Ingram, Daniel Falele, the kid out of Australia, 6'9", 4'10", right. I think he's down like 395 now. I didn't expect him to do well at the event because I've seen him play in person several times now, mostly in practice. He's only played one football game in his life, and it was a spring game, and I was there for that. But I got to tell you, I was actually pretty encouraged that he didn't get dominated by some of the best speed rushers in the country. He had some good reps. He had some reps where he got his hands on people. His feet didn't look as slow as I expected them to look. So I'm encouraged by Daniel's improvement. He's a nice kid. You talk to him, he's kind of shy, but a lot of people think he's just kind of like a sideshow with the size, but there's a good athlete there. I guess he had some pretty impressive dunks when he was at Clemson, I was told. So I'm actually pretty encouraged about him. I know Michigan's in on him. I think Tennessee's in on him as well. But that could be a good get for FSU. And a kid who, look, he's raw, as you would expect a guy to be who has never played football before.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm encouraged by the rate of his ascension.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that's a good – I mean, that is a name that you've seen thrown a lot out there. And a lot of it's just based off the guy looks like kind of another worldly creation. But, if that guy can mature into any kind of able-bodied football player, look out. Because this is a dumb cliche sometimes, but that is a scary kind of next generation of athlete. If we think that's really the direction that this sport and kind of sport in general is going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The good, 6'10", 400 pound guy. That's have fun being the future of an offensive line in 20 years.
Goal line. That'll be fun. So there's some rumblings, actually, that Micah Parsons, the recent Penn State defensive end / outside linebacker decommitment, might not end up at Ohio State like a lot of people thought he would. Some questions as to whether he's a take for Ohio State. I'm not sure I believe those rumors.
if that kid's not a take, damn. Yeah, you're doing some things, Ohio State. That'd be impressive.
Exactly. I'm not really sure about the full details of that, or even if I believe that. But look, you know, that's a rumor that was out there. We'll see if that's actually true. I mean, by the time this is out, maybe he'll actually commit to Ohio State. I do think that some of the Southern schools are perhaps more in this than previously believed. Maybe Bama, Georgia, FSU could get involved here with Micah Parsons. And, you know, his dad is very involved in his recruitment and I think has a watchful eye on everything that's going on at a lot of these schools.
I see what you did there. I know Georgia likes their – not necessarily that they think they're going to sign him, but they think that they're going to be a player in that game. So something to look for, and a really talented kid if you aren't immediately familiar with him. And if you want to know I mean, he's a five-star end. I think he's ranked as high as a fourth or fifth prospect in the country by a couple different services. So when I make a joke about if that's not a take for Ohio State, then they're on the ball when it comes to recruiting. That's what I'm referencing. So, Bud, which direction would you like to go next as far as a review of an individual prospect?
Let me go a little rapid fire here. FSU does need another defensive tackle. Maybe Rick Sandage out of South Carolina could be an option if they can get him on campus. Staying in South Carolina, Ingram, I really liked Channing Tindall as a linebacker.
Yeah, out of South Carolina. You and a lot of people, definitely.
Yeah, I had never seen him in person, but I've seen his film. It's violent. He's aggressive, and in person he checked out. I mean, he's probably, I don't know, 6'1", over 200. You know, kind of a run and hit type guy, and I liked it a lot. So that was encouraging. Wouldn't be surprised if FSU gets in on him some. FSU got Antoine Green out of Rockledge. Over there on the East Coast, Space Coast, and I've liked Antoine Green because I felt like this kid was just very underrated, and he came to camp, the camp that I was actually not at in June, I'll be at the July one, and balled out and got the offer, but not just an FSU offer. He got an Ohio State offer, he got a Tennessee offer, I think he got a Georgia offer, and several other offers too within the last 6 weeks, and at the time, I put him in my article, the top 19 unrated prospects in the country. And I don't know what his rating is now. I didn't look before the show, but I would anticipate that it would continue to go up because for the most part, the schools I just listed don't take a lot of two stars or zero stars, right? Like they're not reaching on prospects in June or July. So look, I don't like the rankings this year. Okay. I think that when you look at it, I think that some of these rating services are just behind in what they're doing, right? You got the scout guys who were wondering who they're going to be bought by.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, they get bought by 247. And then if you work for them, your immediate thought is, well, damn, am I going to get fired? Because they already have a really good, you know, insert the team name site here. You've got you know, some of the scouts guys like Chad Simmons left for rivals. So I don't know, you know, if scouts rankings are up to date. I'm not sure 247s are quite as up to date as they've been in recent years. I like Barton Simmons. I know him pretty well. He's kind of their main ratings guy. ESPN fired like half their recruiting staff.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't know how up to date theirs are. And Rivals has been shuffling a lot as well, especially with their new owner and to see what's going to happen there. I'm not saying they're bad. I just think they're a little bit behind schedule, you know, and that's not just FSU specific. I mean, if I can write an article about, look, here's 19 dudes without a rating in June.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who are like legitimate good players are going to have high-level BCS offers or already do. That to me is just a problem. So I would not worry about the rankings at this point in the year. I don't think FSU is killing on the recruiting trail, but they're certainly not doing poorly. Some negative news here you want to talk about. James Cook decommitted from Florida State, citing a business decision, Ingram.
Well, I can that's just funny in the way that came across. okay, so we've talked about James Cook a couple times on here, and I think we've done this fairly well and been pretty honest about it. I think I came as close to saying there's a large part of me that wants him to go to another school. I think it'd be good for Florida State. I think it'd be good for James Cook. I think it might be good for the collective fan base. I mean, I don't know that I would be able to watch that kid make any run where I wouldn't in the back of my brain go, well, his brother probably would have taken that to the house. And if James Cook is a kid who wants to come in and play immediately and would have a hard time not getting a large percentage of the carries, then that's going to be tough, potentially in Tallahassee, specifically with the fact that he reclassified. So it's an interesting situation. I know it's real easy to go, oh, look at the last name and have memories of his brother and say that this is a major loss for Florida State, but I'm just not sure that it is. And look, I don't know that we've ever really sugarcoated a whole lot. If it was, I promise you, we would tell you. But I don't know that this is any kind of major setback for Florida State at all.
I think I would agree with you. I think it's a setback, but not a major one. They already landed three studs last year. Running back is a position where you can come in and contribute immediately if you are good enough, but I don't think anybody thinks that James Cook is better than Cam Akers. So he would, unless Akers were to get hurt, knock on wood, he would definitively be at best the number two back. And we know for a fact that Jimbo Fisher really does not share carries all that much. Like, there's this narrative out there that it happens, but we dug up the stats for the show, right? And it was like the top guy usually averages, I think it was 180 something. The next guy averages like 80, and the next guy averages like 15 or something. So unless you're in that, you know, that even the number two guy is not getting 100 carries a year. That's not a whole lot of playing time. And so while Georgia did sign a five-star last year out of Philadelphia, and they do have a five-star coming in this year, who's better than Cook, by the way, in Zamir White, his path to playing time probably is more likely at Georgia because Florida State simply has a more talented backfield right now. There's also, I think you hit a nail on the head there. There's an absolute possibility that maybe it's just good to get out of your brother's shadow. You know, like, what are the chances he lives up to Dalvin Cook and Dalvin's career in Tallahassee? I mean, very small. Even if he has a great career, Dalvin was the best back in school history by a mile.
Very likely the best back in conference history. I mean, it's hard to overstate how good of a player Cook was.
Exactly right. So I just kind of think, I wish him well. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that necessarily that big of a loss. If it was at another position, certainly. And I think James Cook's a heck of a player, by the way. I don't want to disparage his skills at all. But I don't think it's necessarily that big of a loss. As far as the chance he comes back, I don't think they're great. I mean, I think it's possible, but you know, I don't think they're tremendous. I think Georgia's probably the most likely spot for him at this point.
All right, Bud, you just covered, we covered the Cook story that we definitely wanted to talk about, the green commitment that you had mentioned in the previous article. A kid that we have talked about personally a couple times, I don't know if we've ever recorded and discussed him, and that's probably been a good thing only because it's not necessarily the easiest name to pronounce, but it's a kid who sounds like he set a date for his commitment, and from all accounts and people that I've talked to, I would expect this to end positively for Florida State. But it's a 6'4", 6'5" safety out of Louisiana by the name of Israel Mukamehu, I think, Mukamu. It's Mukamu, but a really talented, tall prospect. I was talking to somebody over the weekend about him, said he may very well kind of remind Florida State fans of Pat Watkins, if you remember that far back. But a kid that looks like very well may end up in this class.
Yeah, absolutely. He plays for Parkway in Bossier City, which is kind of near Shreveport up there in North Louisiana. Interesting here, Parkway also is the home of Justin Rogers, the quarterback who picked TCU over LSU. And of Terrace Marshall Jr., who I think is going to pick LSU, for my money, the number one receiver in the country. But that's certainly a good high school to get in at, if you can, to the extent you can get in there over guys that LSU really wants. But we also heard very good things about Mukamu at LSU camp. So that's two very good defensive staffs. He's impressed. Like you said, 6'4", 6'4", very athletic. That's another guy who, you know, maybe if he was more on the camp circuit, he would have blown up more as far as the star ratings go. But FSU likes him a lot, and I like his film.
Yeah, yeah. If Florida State ends up getting him, do not despair based on the fact that it only has three stars next to his name as opposed to four or five. That's a really good get. And obviously, anytime you can put somebody with that type of height in the back of your secondary, it lets you do some very unique things. Bud, anything else you want to mention as far as recruiting or your experience out in the Pac Northwest before we transition into some listener questions here?
Yeah, so I was on the same flight home as most the college stars they bring out there, and the two guys. Or three guys from FSU who they had out were Derwin James, Josh Sweat, and Tavares McFadden. And as we got on the plane, I got to see Derwin and Josh Sweat learn the real hard way that I think it's the 737s, right? So you have the three rows of, or you have the row of exit seats, which is 3 and 3. Then you had the 2 and 2, right? With the vacant spot next to them by the window. And then behind that, there's another row of 3 and 3. Well, those middle seats, the middle row, not the middle seat, but the middle row, the 2 and 2. Those guys thought they had exit row seats on a flight from Portland to Atlanta, which, you know, after a long week is real tired. And I just felt so bad for Josh Sweat because he's like 6'6".
Right.
And not only is that not an exit row seat, but it's also a seat that does not recline.
Oh yeah, so they got the worst of. So they were in front of an exit row, is that right?
So no, they're in between basically. So it's like there's 3 and 3, right? So A, B, C, D, E, F,
right?
That's an exit, and then there's basically B, C, D, E. So there's no window on each on the row that's kind of in between the two exit row true rows. But online, when you check in,
I got you.
On Delta, it's weird, man. It looks like it's an exit row,
mm-hmm.
So people click it, but it's really not. I've learned that lesson before as well. So that, I feel bad for Josh Sweat's legs. Derwin's not so tall, so that's not quite as big of a deal. But, he was like, are you kidding me? Really? This doesn't recline? Oh, man. Brutal. So those guys rep for the Noles out there pretty well. Derwin looks absolutely huge. He was probably bigger than almost all the linebackers out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
it's a shame he hadn't gotten any positive off-season publicity or any strong publications writing about him.
Yeah, was that Sports Illustrated said he was the number one player in the country?
Yeah, Sports Illustrated said that. A couple people have written just ridiculous articles about him. And look, he's one of the best athletes to ever play football at Florida State. You just hadn't had the time to really put together the football resume, but the that guy is athletically on par with Antonio Cromartie and just a couple other people of just wildly freakish nature. So knock on wood, no injuries there, and hopefully we all get to enjoy kind of a culmination and a final year of one of the more talented people to wear a garnet and gold.
No doubt.
All right, bud, before we move on with the podcast, I always want to carve some time out to thank our friends at Madison Social and the For the Table Restaurant Group. Just been with us since day one. Want to go ahead and put in a early reminder to you that this podcast will be out on a Monday, July the 10th, and I'm offering this to you now as a 7-day advance that the 17th is always Reuben Day and something to have in the back of your mind if you're down in Tallahassee come next Monday. But what I wanted to specifically mention tonight is that Madison Social, always looking to have little different things that are going on the vast majority of the week. And one thing that they just recently rolled out that I wanted to mention, and particularly when looking at some of our reviews and feedback that we've had, Bud, we've got a lot of young professionals that listen to us, which is kind of the standard podcast audience and demographic. But we also have more than I would have imagined and more than your demos would typically dictate, that we've got a lot of families and a lot of people that listen to this with their kids. And if you're in Tallahassee or if you're in Tallahassee on Sunday nights, keep in mind Madison Social. Every Sunday night from 4 to 10, they are having something called the Noel Family Dinner. Kids will receive a free kids meal with an adult entree purchased. And those of you who do not have kids, it looks as though you'll receive either the BLT dip or some other similar priced appetizer. So again, that's Sunday nights from 4 to 10 p.m., the Knoll family dinner going on at Madison Social.
That sounds absolutely delicious. Also, I believe they have that going on at Central as well. There.
Okay.
Should be pretty cool. So Madso and Central, like you said, 4 to 10. For people without kids, receive a free order of risotto balls for the table. That's one free order for every two entrees ordered. Obviously, if you have kids, receive one free kids meal with each adult entree purchase. So that's pretty awesome. Also, if you're listening to this on a Monday, it happens to be in Tallahassee, Central has Meatball Monday, where they offer their delicious meatballs at a special price, and you should definitely go hit those up because Central is awesome and easily the best Italian place in town. But it's not like just all heavy Italian stuff. It's nice, like good for summer, but the meatballs are also really, really good. So hit those up. And like you said, we also need those five-star review on Apple Podcasts, man. We've stalled out a little bit, but they're coming in. We want to get to 600 five-star reviews, and I think we're 50-something away?
I think we're only about 15 away. I think we're somewhere around 585 or so, bud.
Oh, wow. Okay, so my iTunes must not be updating. Yeah, by the way, guys, it's now called Apple Podcasts, if you didn't know that. So if you hear us saying Apple Podcasts, that is the old iTunes, but they want us to switch branding. So we're going to start calling it whatever Apple wants us to call it.
Exactly. So that maybe we're going to do pretty much whatever they tell us to do.
We're kind of at their mercy entirely.
That is Apple Podcasts now. Is that in its more formal name.
Right. And on the off chance they have some sort of software that actually listens to the podcast for people using the outdated term, which I don't want to repeat again in case they have that software and ding us for it. We're just going to go with Apple Podcast only. So definitely rate and review us on there. Rate and review us on Stitcher, by the way. We don't have a whole lot of reviews on Stitcher. We're also on SoundCloud. And Google Play Music. Google Play Music, which I've actually, as an Android user, I've been using a lot, man. It's really nice because I listen to a podcast on my computer. I can hit pause. I can pull up on my phone. And as long as I'm signed in on my phone, too, which, of course, I am, and I'll hit play on my phone, it'll actually pick up where I left off listening on my laptop.
Wow. Very cool.
That's kind of cool.
That is cool.
So pretty sweet there. You can also download us for offline episodes if you happen to be like on a flight or something like that, and you can do that on most of those apps as well. All right, let's get a little mailbag time.
Let's do it
here. All right, this one comes from Rob, and this is the hilarious. With a strong front seven and no quarterback, is Miami the new the new Florida?
I'll hang up and listen. That's how he wrapped that one up.
And I think the answer for at least a year is yeah, right? I mean, great front seven, potentially. The secondary is not as good as the Florida teams were. Quarterback, total unknown, could be a total zero. That kind of sounds almost exactly like what Florida's been for about a half decade.
Yeah, sounds very familiar. It does.
That's a good observation. Several people asked us this one. I'm not really sure I get this, but favorite flavor of Kool-Aid? Mine is purple, so grape.
Yeah. People hate this, but that is my answer exactly as well. So there you go.
For some fake disagreement, I'm then going to go with red.
Yeah, red's a good solid color. It's like, an original.
I think those are kind of the only two that are like I can't even really name another color of Kool-Aid that was like legitimately bought.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, that is the main. That's the main product line. You either got purple slash grape or deep dark red.
Which is that supposed to be fruit punch or cherry? I'm not sure. It's interesting that we actually call Kool-Aid flavors by their color, not by their actual.
Well, I'd say there's a reason for that, but yeah, I don't know how much grapes are involved in the grape color per se, but that's probably. Probably a good cover of the Kool-Aid discussion.
All right. Let's go. Anger, we got a lot of questions about playing time.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of grouped them here on our show notes sheet together. First question comes, I actually didn't put the names on this week. So do you think Ontario Wilson, who is the athlete they signed out of South Georgia, along with Tamori and Terry, do we think he sees Byrne as a receiver given the current numbers? And I think that's referencing the lack of proven receiver numbers on the roster right now. How about Deontay Sheffield in the slot, if not a gray shirt? Well, I think Wilson is going to play DB, most likely. I think that's where they like him at, and that's where they recruited him to play at. So I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of burn at receiver, most likely. I can't totally rule it out. He certainly has some skills. And then Deontay Sheffield, yeah, I think it's very possible he could end up playing some receiver. Maybe not this year, but I think that could be his ultimate spot, perhaps as sort of a hybrid-type contributor there, because I don't see him getting a whole lot of carries as a running back in this backfield. I just think you got a lot of guys who are real talented and more talented than Deontay, who I actually like a lot, by the way, and thought the whole time that he was much better than Southern Miss, than Southern Miss, which was for a while his top offer. And then the question asks, if not a gray shirt, I actually think he was going to be a blue shirt, where he basically comes in as a walk-on and then kind of gets his scholarship the following year. So we'll see how that all works out.
Bud, second question here. We've had to make a little bit of an adjustment based off an assumed auto-correction. But the question posed is, are there enough plays on offense to get decent reps to Rasul, Patrick, and what we believe is Campbell isn't George Campbell, or is someone going to get shorted?
Well, I think somebody's going to get shorted. Now, I don't know if it's one of these guys. Maybe if they step up enough that they'll take some reps from someone else. But, you know, at this point, do you project George Campbell in your top four receivers? I don't. I mean, yeah. We have actually a rule in the podcast that we're not going to talk about him very much until he actually does something and stays healthy for a couple games in a row. Rasul, I like, but I mean, there's a lot of guys on this roster you like, but do you like him enough to get him a lot of carries? He's another guy who has to stay healthy. I know he got banged up some last year. Jaquez Patrick, Ingram, I don't know about you, but based on the playing time he got last year at times, especially in some of those more blowout games, I don't know. Does Jimbo Fisher not like him, or does the offensive staff just not trust him or something? Because he really didn't get the playing time he thought he would get after some good running early in the year.
No, you did not, and I've gone on this to the point where I'm sure it's obnoxious to some of our listeners, but if you would have told me the way and the style that he played in the beginning of the year and then paired that with the amount of options and the amount of carries he got, I would have told you that those things were incompatible, that you weren't going to see somebody make the adjustments and kind of transform their running style into that which was hoped for, and then not see as nearly as many opportunities as you would have thought would have followed. So I'm a little curious as to Patrick and if he's really a favorite option by the staff as well, because there's something there that just doesn't fit for that kid to run the way and as successful as he was in the first couple of games last year, and got a curious lack of carries at the back end of the year. And I know you had Dalvin Cook, and you don't have to tell me how talented Dalvin Cook is, and that you want to take advantage of a talent like that as much as possible, but that still isn't completely match up, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. Okay, Aaron, next question here. You can start. How do you foresee the carry distribution between Patrick and Akers? Keep Patrick in short yardage roles, or do we get split backfields, touches, etc.?
I think that at least by the third or fourth game, I think that Akers is going to be the number one option, and more times than not, the number one option consumes there's not a whole lot of roles in Jimbo Fisher's offense. Honestly, the only running back that I would say that really created a role, two stand out. I mean, Carlos on the 2013 team and 2014 team, they let him situationally run, or no, 2014, excuse me, not 2013, but they let Carlos Williams run situationally in goal line, and had a disproportionate amount of touchdowns for a period there as a byproduct of it. And also, James Wilder had a had a real situational role, but they're more or less when Jimbo finds a running back, he finds a running back, and there's not too many times that he finds a reason to take him off the field.
Totally. The number one back on average gets 150% more carries than the number two back. I'll give you a third guy who actually did get some. I thought Ty Jones had a little bit of a goal line role for a time there back in
Ooh, reaching back in history. Yeah. Yeah. Jones.
But of course, when you run into your quarterback
at NC State, wasn't that at NC State? Who was? Wasn't that just
That was NC State. By the way,
list of whores up there.
If you didn't know, we had a guy on staff tell us what happened on that play, and Jones definitely ran into Potter. It was not the other way around. I know that was back in the day, so most of y'all are probably newer listeners, but that's literally what happened there. Was that 2010 or 2008?
I think that was 2008. Pretty sure it was.
Well, we had Jermaine Thomas on the team. Right,
and Ty Abedes is still one of the better nicknames that's come out of the Florida State.
And it was said lovingly,
lexicon. Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Until he caused the fumble, and then you know,
then it went south. That was a great one.
Yeah,
for a period of time.
Because you had the Wilford Brimley memes. I think I agree with you, man. Is Patrick a great short yardage runner? At times, he's done some good stuff, but I don't know if he's necessarily quite the hammer that, like, James Wilder was or that Carlos was. We'll see.
Not sure we can answer that yet.
Akers is a stud. I expect him to be the number one running back.
Okay, so the next question is whether or not Vickers or Neighbors is your projected starter at fullback. I'll just tell you, I was because, you know, I'm cool and I do things like this. I was listening to Jimbo's speech that he made, I think, in the last 10 days or so, at the Panama, why do I want to say this every time? Not Panama City. It was at the Pensacola Seminole Boosters group. And didn't mention Neighbors, did talk for a good bit about Vickers and that the fact that he may be the most physically or at least the most athletically gifted fullback that he's had during his time in Tallahassee. And by all accounts, it sounded like Vickers is going to be your number one when it comes to fullback.
I think because of the versatility that he brings to the offense, that's probably a good idea. But I'm still excited about Neighbors' physicality, man. He had some nice physical plays last year, and I really do hope that he gets in there some.
Gives you a lot of flexibility. Gives you an H-back option that nobody else on this roster really does.
I totally agree with that. All right, hey, here's a question for you. This is not on the sheet. Just kind of spur of the moment. Is there a guy – what position – do you think Jimbo Fisher manages to hype the most in the offseason where the actual in-season production just doesn't measure up to that hype?
Good question. I mean, where are you going?
I was
going
to say running back.
Running back's there. I mean, and he provided a ton of hype when I listened to him go over the running backs.
Ryan Green, maybe the most athletic player on the team.
The most athletic player on the team, exactly. Yeah. Most explosive.
And it's kind of like,
Amir Rasul right. Faster than Dalvin, which yep. may be true, but just there was a lot of
on a track maybe a
lot of positives and a lot of potential hyperbole being gushed about that position.
But this happens every year, like literally every year. All the running backs are potential future NFL guys, et cetera, and yet the best guy usually plays a lot more than the number two, and the number two plays a heck of a lot more than the number three, who barely plays at all. Like, they just don't share carries that much in this offense. And we have a decade of data here. That's pretty rare in college football to have an offensive coordinator stay in place for 10 years. But we have it. And we know they just don't rotate backs that much. So, anyway. All right, man. Hey, actually, I think we're going to stop it there. Just because we have so many good questions that we actually have enough to do another show this week. So, you may get a twofer. Sometimes we usually go in the offseason about once every – I don't know, 10 days or so, but I think we want to do more of these now. And we have over 50 questions tonight received, so that's pretty awesome. Went a little bit long on the recruiting talk. Hope you all enjoyed that. Be sure to follow up with any recruiting-related questions we have. We'll always talk some recruiting on the show. We know some people don't like following it during the offseason, and I totally get that because a lot of the folks don't actually know who these kids are yet, and this show is a good blending of diehards and sort of novices, so we want to cater to both groups. As always, rate and review us on iTunes. 5 stars. Appreciate you listening. Tell your friends about it. We want to get to where we're not only, I mean, we want to stay the biggest FSU podcast, certainly. We want to be the biggest team sports-related podcast on iTunes. So help us out there and support our sponsors. We'll talk to you next time.